Alan Housman.
If I had my druthers to talk to you tonight, would be set apart to another time. But I have not been able to shed these thoughts from my mind. And I trust that you will bear with me as I try to bring to us something that is a part or should be a part of our endeavors in supporting and aiding and assisting in the advancement of the cause of Christ. I might say that there is a subject, but I'm not going to mention what the subject is because it identifies itself as I go along. In the vision that is somewhat familiar to you now, the most of you, that was given to me some few short years ago, in which it was identified that the Church of Christ was at a crossroads. Now that does not mean that the Church of Christ is of such low estate in its activities and in its righteousness that we could say, well, we're at the crossroads and we just don't know what to do. The latter part of my statement might be somewhat true. I have been asked that I might present that vision for publication in the Advocate. But I have some reticence about doing it because it is a message meant entirely for the Church of Christ. It is meant for each of us as members of the church and not for the general public. And our Advocate goes to a considerable number of people that are outside of the church. Some, of course, are part of the restoration. But it might be misinterpreted to understand that the Church of Christ is not what it should be. Well, in part, that is correct. But that will be the case till the end of time when Christ himself shall return to earth and restore all things and make all truths evident, some of which we have little understanding. Tonight I talk to you about one of those conditions that was identified at the crossroads. Among those things identified, there was four items. Among them was the word misunderstanding or confusion. And there are some things about the principles of our doctrine, I would rather say not our doctrine, but it becomes our doctrine if God gives it to us, of course. But the doctrine of Christ in its entirety involves sometimes things that are not normally called the spiritual aspect of our work. There are things that in our activities and our way of helping to promulgate and advance the gospel of Jesus Christ that are required in another channel and another thought or another idea of how we support. We are not of the world, and therefore those things that we do must be after the directions, the counsels that God gives to us from time to time. In the Articles of Faith and Practice of the Church of Christ, one of the items listed there is that the Bible and the Book of Mormon constitutes the fullness of the gospel. And yet, it seemed contradictory in a latter part of that, of the Articles of Faith. It says that the canon of Scripture is not full. That means that it brings to light statements made in the Scriptures that says that wherever and whenever God speaks, that is Scripture. We believe in latter-day revelation. We believe that God reveals himself, his mind, and works upon the minds of whom he will choose to speak forth and utter that which is his counsel and admonition. Sometimes, because of our dilatory endeavors and lack of enthusiasm about the entire part of the gospel of Christ, we become lax, and therefore we come short of more of the blessings that God would have for us to have. I'm going to talk about a subject that has been neglected by a part of our ministry that are set apart a purpose to teach our people on this subject. It is not really for the apostles to spend their time dwelling upon this subject. I might as well back off on the word that I gave a minute ago and not tell you what it is, and it's tithing. It is not for us, as the apostle stated long years ago, it was not meet for them to spend their times waiting on tables. That was the expression they used. But rather that the people should choose out from among them 7 men of goodly report. And to them would be given the task of raising money and receiving monies from the peoples to be sent to Jerusalem and there distributed to the poor and the needy and the widows and orphans. And that this labor and this task would no longer be left to the apostles to do. I'm sorry to say that some number of years ago, quite a number of years ago, the Articles of Faith and Practice, which, by the way, is amendable, was amended to this part of that one clause in our Articles of Faith and Practice, and it was added that the apostles should have also the say on the financial matters of the church, contrary to the directions that was given in the beginning by the apostles of old, that they no longer wanted that task to be put upon their shoulders, that 7 men would be set apart to take care of that responsibility. But nevertheless, we find today that it has, because of conditions that have prevailed through time in recent years, it was felt that the apostles should have part of the overseeing of the financial part of the church. And so to that end, then it is our responsibility to remind our people somewhat of their obligations in other things than that which is essentially called the spiritual, but that which is the works of our spirituality. It is, tithing is a work that is brought into being by our faith and our trust in God, in our open heart and joy in giving and supporting the gospel of Jesus Christ, in so much that missionaries can be sent out and minister to the souls of men and to look after our own people abroad in the land and across the world. All of us are not familiar with just really what tithing constitutes. If I would ask anyone in here that is of an age beyond 10 years old, probably, could tell me that tithing is a tenth. But is a tenth of what? And so we try to bring to you from the scriptures something that will identify to us that tithing is one-tenth of our increase. Not the money you necessarily bring home, but the increase that there are things that are taken out of your paycheck, but there are things that are taken out of your paycheck that eventually will pay you, and you pay tithes on those things. But I don't want to get into the depth of that right at the moment. I would like to back up the statements that we make as a church that are one of our mediums for the progress of the church is through our financial obligations, being tithes and offerings. And so we have found that in our latter-day counsel and instruction given to us through the revealment of God in the Book of Mormon, that there is counsel to come to us through Christ himself, which will identify that this is a part of our duties in life. And if I was to read it all, it would take considerable time, and I don't know whether I will have time to do all that. But if I cannot, I will leave it to you to follow through from the 10th and the 11th chapters of the 3rd chapter, of the 10th chapter of 3rd Nephi. 10th and 11th chapters of 3rd Nephi. Herein is contained the counsel that God has given, or that Christ has given, to the Nephites and those remnant of the house of Israel to whom he has been ministering. And I'll read in part his counsel then, and why that we have, therefore, tithing as a medium by which we shall financially support the widows, the orphans, and the missionary arm of the church. And I will read in the very first, from the very beginning of the 10th chapter of 3rd Nephi. But if they will repent and hearken unto my words, and harden not their hearts, I will establish my church among them, and they shall come in unto the covenant, and be numbered among this, the remnant of Jacob, unto whom I have given the land for their inheritance, and they shall assist my people, the remnant of Jacob. Now, if we remember that the tithing is first identified clear way back in the days of Abraham, when he paid tithes to Melchizedek. And one would say, well, that's back in the Old Testament times, and that was done away with. And that when Christ came, he established a new and living law, and that old things were done away. But we also are mindful of the fact that Christ said, I came not to destroy the law. And so the law is not destroyed, and there's a purpose in it, because the Jews would have no law if that had been the case. And they live by that law. They believe in that law, and they adhere to it for the most part, those that are conscientious of their covenants with God. And so there was a covenant made way back there that Abraham would give a tenth of his increase, the tenth of his flocks and of his production from the land. And that would be for that purpose for which we use it today. And it's identified even in the Reformation churches that tithe is a medium by which they shall finance themselves. And so here is a covenant. And that covenant is also referred to in the second chapter on a page 107, verses 107 and 9 in the second chapter of 3rd Nephi. I'll not read that, but you can at another time. And shall come into the covenant and be numbered among the remnant of Jacob, unto whom I have given this land for their inheritance, and they shall assist my people, the remnant of Jacob. Now Jacob had several sons. Among them was two in particular that are much in having to do with our being established as we are today. Two sons of Joseph, one of the sons of Jacob. And these two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, of which we are generally, the mostly, are Ephraim. Manasseh being the dark-skinned people that one day we are to take on a very great scale an activity among the Indians, who in turn will reach out to the rest of the house of Israel, particularly to the Jews. And so this is a covenant numbered among the remnant of Jacob, unto whom I have given this land for their inheritance, and they shall assist my people, the remnant of Jacob. That's this land on which we live. And also as many as the house of Israel as shall come, that they may build a city which shall be called the New Jerusalem. And then shall they assist my people, that they may be gathered in who are scattered upon all the face of the land, even unto New Jerusalem. Now, we understand, of course, that this New Jerusalem is yet to be established. But it is the culmination of the activities, the faith and trust that they have in God's teachings and commandments, that it will be established. And it's the result of the righteousness of his people. We'll quickly refer to that. And then shall the power of heaven come down among them, and I also will be in their midst. So this is a time yet shortly to be upon us. And then shall the work of the Father commence at that day, even when the gospel shall be preached among the remnant of this people. Now, the gospel, as far as the teachings to the children of Manasseh, it is very, very limited. It's been scattered over the years, and for an outright evangelizing, it has not yet been possible. And I have been somewhat discouraged at various times because I thought we had a start, and then we lost by death those that we had felt assured would be helping in leadership among their people. But that's just a matter of thought as we pass by. And it's going to be preached among the remnant of this people. Verily I say unto you all, at that day shall the work of the Father commence among the dispersed of my people, yea, even the tribes which have been lost, which the Father hath led away out of Jerusalem. Yea, the work shall commence among all the dispersed of my people with the Father to prepare the way whereby they may come unto me, that they may call on the Father in my name. Yea, and then shall the work commence with the Father among all nations, in preparing the way whereby the people may be gathered home to the land of their inheritance. Now this is the overall aspect of the result of the gospel of Jesus Christ, of whom we are the ones that disperse this gospel to the souls of men. And then shall they go out to all nations, and they shall not go out in haste nor in flight, for I will go before them, saith the Father, and I will be their rearward, and then shall that which is written come to pass. Now he's going to quote from Isaiah, the 54th chapter. Christ himself is speaking. Sing, O barren, thou that didst not hear, bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud. And thou that didst not travail with child. For more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them that stretch forth the curtains of their habitations, spare not, lengthen thy cords, and straighten thy stakes. For thou shalt break forth in the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame. For thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. For thy Maker, thy husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth shall be he be called. For the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit, a wife of the youth, when thou wast refused, saith thy God. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord, thy Redeemer. This is a wonderful promise, because in our more or less indecisive moods that we're in today, not knowing for sure if this is the manner in which we should do things or the time, and so this indecision has a great deal to do with how we progress and grow. And on that point, that's why I'm talking to you about this one particular part. Now, in the vision that came to me, showing the crossroads and identifying that there was fear and indecision listed among the items there, that we are so much involved in today. If we are to teach the entire gospel of Jesus Christ, it's based on how much we love and how much faith we have in exercising that love to the promotion of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and just how much we can give of ourselves and of our talents and of the product of our works, and how willingly that we may do so. And here is an admonition or a comforting words that for a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. So there's going to be a period of activity, great activity, and in little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord thy Redeemer. And in part, when we have come to that place where we lack no ability to make our decisions righteously, then we will know that this promise is being fulfilled among us. For this, and if you will note in your Books of Mormon, it says, "For this the waters of Noah unto me." Now, if you want to make a correction of this, this is a misprint. And between the word "this" and "the," you put "is as." I'll read it that way. "For this is as the waters of Noah unto me." Now, that's the way it is quoted in 54th chapter and the 9th verse of Isaiah. That is a printer's mistake. "For as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee. For the mountains that shall depart and the hills that shall be moved, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Lord that hath mercy on thee." Here is the promise that it will be fulfilled when we have met our commitments and have willingly made new commitments when we discover that they're necessary to be made. Oh, and now we're quoting from the 54th chapter of Isaiah, as Christ is doing here, and beginning at the 19th verse. "O thou afflicted, tossed and tempest, and set and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colors, and lay thy foundations with sapphires. I will make thy windows of agates, and thy gates like carbuncles, and all thy borders of pleasant stones. And all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. In righteousness shalt thou be established, thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear." That's another one of the things that's itemized as hanging over the church. We fear lest we're going to offend somebody if we teach on certain subjects. That is just one avenue of how fear is identified hovering above us. "In righteousness shalt thou be established, thou shalt be far from oppression, thou shalt not fear, and from terror, for it shall not come near thee. Behold, they shall surely gather together against thee, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for my sake. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals on the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work. And I have created the waster to destroy. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall revile against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord." A wonderful promise is the result of our obedience to this, which is the counsel of Christ, in referring again to his prophet of old, Isaiah. Again, I say, in the 54th chapter, from the 11th to the 17th verses. "And now, behold, I say unto you that ye ought to search these things. Yea, a commandment I give unto you, that ye search these things diligently, for great are the words of Isaiah. For surely he spake on as touching all things concerning my people, which are of the house of Israel. Therefore, it must needs be that he must speak also to the Gentiles. And all things that he spake hath been and shall be, even according to the words which he spake. Therefore, give heed to my words. Write the things which I have told you, and according to the times and the will of the Father, they shall go forth unto the Gentiles." That has been done, and I'm reading from it. And whosoever shall hearken unto my words and repent, and repenteth and is baptized, the same shall be saved. Search the prophets, for many there be that testify of these things. Now it came to pass that when Jesus had said these words, he said unto them again, after he had expounded, and expound means that he has explained it to them. Explaining. Now that's different than standing up and preaching and exhorting. Exhort means to direct their way and tell them how and give commandments and rules and laws. Behold, other scriptures. No, I'll back up. And he expounded all the scriptures unto them which they had received. He said unto them, behold, other scriptures I would that ye should write that ye have not. And we'll read of that. And so it came to pass that Nephi, being forth, he said unto Nephi, bring forth the record which ye have kept. And when Nephi had brought forth the records and laid them before him, he cast his eyes upon them and said, verily I say unto you, I commanded my servant Samuel the Lamanite, that he should testify unto this people, that at the day that the Father should glorify his name in me, that there were many saints that should rise from the dead, and should appear unto many, and should minister unto them. And he said unto them, were it not so? Now he's trying to point out that God has used a man named Samuel, a prophet of God. And they heard Samuel deliver a powerful sermon and words from God himself directly. And he's reminding them of this, and yet they haven't written it down. This is just but to lead to what he's coming to a moment or so from now. And they said, yes, it was so that they knew of Samuel doing this. And his disciples answered him and said, yea, Lord, Samuel did prophesy according to thy works, and they were all fulfilled. And Jesus said unto them, howbeit that ye have not written this thing, that many saints did arise and appear unto many and did minister unto them. And it came to pass that Nephi remembered that this thing had not been written, and it came to pass that Jesus commanded that it should be written. Therefore, it was written according to the commandment. And so there are scriptures that was intended that we have today, which if it had not been so, we would not been able to have been reading this as I am doing tonight. In the 11th chapter, now it came to pass when Jesus had expounded all the scriptures in one. In other words, he explained it to them. Which they had written, he commanded that they should teach the things which he had expounded unto them. And it came to pass that he commanded them that they should write the words of the Father, which the Father had given unto Malachi, which he should tell unto them. Now he's having a reference to one of his other prophets, even Malachi. And it came to pass that after they were written, he expounded them. So they wrote the words of Malachi. And these are the words which he did tell them, saying, thus saith the Father unto Malachi. And this is in the third chapter of Malachi, and beginning at the very first part of the chapter. Behold, I will send my messenger, he shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. But who shall abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand as when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire and like fuller's soap. And I explained, I guess the other night or sometime recently, that fuller's soap is a cleansing agent. That's the way it's identified in your dictionary. And we can very well understand it in the spiritual sense. And he shall set as a refiner and purifier of silver. He shall purify the sons of Levi. That's the ministry. And purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering of righteousness. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem, two places, be pleasant unto the Lord as in the days of old and as in former years. And I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers and those false swearers and against those that oppress the hireling in their wages, the widow, the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger and fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. For I am the Lord, I change not, Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers ye are gone away from mine ordinances, and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Yea, ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. That's a pretty strong words that the Lord's given, because it's very apparent that they did not have this scripture with them, because they came over here to this land long before Malachi, the prophet, spoke and wrote these words. And so, seeing that they did not have it, therefore Christ was now delivering that to them. And they have now written them down. And that's what happened to those people back there when they neglected to abide by one of those principles that are part of our active life, the result and promotion of the gospel. In the 13th verse, bring ye all the tithes unto the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. There is a magnificent promise given to us. But it behooves us to obey the law that makes it possible. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sake, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast your fruit before the time in the fields, saith the Lord of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for ye shall be delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts. Your words have been stout against me, saith the Lord. Yet ye say, what have we spoken against thee? Ye have said it is vain to serve God. And what doth it profit that we have kept his ordinances, and that ye have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts? And now we call the proud happy. Yea, they that work wickedness are set up. Yea, them that tempt God are even delivered. Now here's one of the first complaints that comes. And it's the same complaint has been had in our day and among our own people. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another. Now that's what we've been doing in this local group here. And it's being done in other places around through the church. It's growing. And it's going to develop into that ability for us to be able to meet our commitments and even make more when we're of that righteous strength that we can endure one of the things of having to give up sometimes some of the things that we cherish so very much, which once we take an account, they're not of great value after all, but just something perhaps maybe to look at. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast your fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. All nations shall call you blessed, for ye shall be the delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts. This is a wonderful promise, and that we don't work just because of a promise. We work because we have faith and trust and love for this that God has given to us among all the peoples of the earth. None such like us. And so they that feared the Lord spake often one to another. And the Lord hearkened and heard, and the book of remembrance was written before him, for them that feared the Lord, and that thought upon his name. In other words, they gave a very strong consideration to what Jesus had been telling them. Then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. For behold, the day cometh that shall then burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall leave them neither root nor branch. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves in the stall, and ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. There should be no fear. So this is another thing that by this adherence to these commandments that Christ is refreshing to these people here and now to us, that we should have no fear. And so that fear that hangs over the crossroads also is diminished and fades away. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with statutes and judgments. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Now that's the end of 3 Malachi, the fourth chapter. Now it came to pass that when Jesus had said these things, he expounded them unto the multitude. And he expounded all things unto them, both great and small. So it must have been important that they have this, as it is written, meant therefore to us. And he did expound all things, even from the beginning until the time that he should come in his glory, yea, even all things which should come upon the face of the earth, even until the elements should melt with fervent heat, and the earth should be wrapped together as a scroll, and the heavens and the earth should pass away. That is yet in the future. It might surprise us just how far off that is and how much closer it is than we might estimate. And even unto the great and last day, when all people and all kindred and all nations and tongues shall stand before God to be judged of their works, whether they be great, be good, or whether they be evil. Or if they be good, unto the resurrection of everlasting life, and if they be evil, to the resurrection of damnation, being on a parallel, the one on the one hand and the other on the other hand, according to the mercy and the justice and the holiness which is in Christ, who was before the world began. This is another item that few people understand, that Christ was the beginning of God's creation. That's how far back our Savior goes. And he speaks with the same authority as God. For in those respects he is. For he is fully representing God in all his entirety. Now, we go on in the 12th chapter. A little ways. And now, there cannot be written in this book even 100th part of the things which Jesus did truly teach unto the people. But behold, the plates of Nephi do contain the more part of the things which he taught the people. And these things have I written, which are a lesser part of the things which he taught. Now, it's even the lesser part. It's not all that he taught them. And I have written them to the intent that they may be brought again unto this people from the Gentiles, according to the words which Jesus had spoken. And when they shall have received this, which is expedient, that they should have first to try their faith. And if it shall so be that they shall believe these things, then shall the greater things be made manifest unto them. And if so be that they will not believe these things, then shall the greater things be withheld from them, even unto their condemnation. Behold, I was about to write them all, which were engraven upon the plates of Nephi, but the Lord forbid it, saying, I will try the faith of my people. Therefore, I, Mormon, do write the things which have been commanded me of the Lord. And as we go farther into this subject, we find that back up a little bit. I found it. I guess I passed over it and didn't know it. I'm backing up to the 29th verse of this 11th chapter of 3 Nephi. And he saith, Christ saith, these scriptures which ye had not with you, the Father commanded that I should give unto you, for it is wisdom in him that they should be given unto future generations. That includes ourselves. So it is a law that is given even down to our generation of time, which is the medium by which we are to promulgate the gospel, to take care of our widows and orphans, and the advancement of the cause of Christ. It is a commitment that we possibly did not know that we had made when we came from the forth of the waters of baptism. It's one of those things that too often we learn afterwards. For most of the time when we begin to talk to individuals that are not acquainted with the fullness of the gospel, we teach them those things that are essential to their preparation for coming into his folding kingdom upon earth. And I don't recall at any time that in my ministry I ever taught them as regarding tithing before they were baptized. Now, it can be done, and I believe that if I had been so spiritually led, I would have done so, and I don't know whether others have done so or not. But it is something that we learn after we have come in and find out that, in a sense, we have made a commitment. For he said, inasmuch as it's for future generations, it's for you and I. Now, what is tithing? If we read in Proverbs, 3rd chapter, the 1st through the 10th verses. The 3rd chapter. We'll read 10 verses. I think that's my intention. My son, forget not my law. Now, we've been telling you that this tithing is a law. And I believe that we have it well established that it is a part of the laws that we are confronted with after we have been within the church and begin to grow and understand the fullness of all that is a part of the doctrines and teachings of the church, which has been given to us of God himself. So in this 3rd chapter of Proverbs, it says, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add unto thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck, and write them upon the table of thine heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not upon thine own understanding. And in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord, and depart from evil. Be not wise in thine own eyes. You know, and I've heard, I don't know how many definitions of what tithing is. And as I recount them, I find that the questions they put and the answers that they would like to give to questions we put, they're evasive. They're trying to evade the issue because they feel that tithing is too harsh a law. For me to give 10% of my increase, I couldn't live. And I've had people, I don't know how many people I've had tell me that, well, the one that I particularly remember is outstanding in this respect. We had a real faithful family up in Michigan that, as I said, we was teaching them the rest of things that are brought to us after we are in the church, mostly, and tithing had been among them. And so they started to pay their tithing. And it hadn't been too long, maybe a couple of years, and the prosperity of the nation wasn't to the very best. And I don't know how it come about, but they got into debts that they found their inability to pay. And here was their next check coming, and they knew that the amount of check would not cover their debts. And so they come to me and apologized. And I wasn't the one they should apologize to at all. But it's the one that made the commandment in the first place. But they came to me and explained that they couldn't meet their tithing this month, or this week, or however it may have been. I guess it was for this week. But they said, we have agreed, my wife and I have agreed, that we would pay back our 10%, but we'd pay an additional 5% to catch up. And to this day, I've never found anybody that ever made such a commitment that I was ever able to catch up. It's something that does not work. It's hard to explain why it doesn't work, but it does not work. And when we have made a commitment to God, whether it be tithing or whatever commitment we have made, it's to Him, not to the ministry to whom is given the obligation of teaching you, but it's to God. And in some of the troubles we've had of recent time, a very short years back, when there was a great Indian influx, activity that it looked like we were going to start teaching the Indians, and that this is going to be the threshold of our movement among the Lamanites and the Nephites, the Indians of today. And there was an abundant amount of money given to those people that just walked off and never seen them again. We bought a bus and gave to them, and it wound up in a ditch up in Wyoming. Nobody ever saw it again. Just ruined. And we bought them another one later on. And we got into difficulty financially. And it was disturbing to our people. And many of them said, well, I'm not going to pay my tithing if that's the case. Those men using that money like that. They forgot that the commitment was with God and not with man. And if the mistake was made, it was the responsibility of those men that made the mistake. But when we... That is why, when it says our faith will be tried, that's one of the things by which we will be tried. But we let our thoughts wander and blame men. They may be to blame for it. But our covenant was with God, not with men. And if we fulfill our promises and meet our commitments, God is going to bless us, like I've read at great length, which you have read, but possibly wasn't thinking of tithing, but only it was just a part of the Book of Mormon that you was reading. And this can't be so. We cannot make our commitments to God, and then because somebody has disturbed us over something that they have done that was not exactly right in meeting their obligations and duties, that if they were elected and appointed to works to do for the church, we back off. We say, well, if that's the way it's going to be done, I'm not going to send my money down there. And we've had some people that are fairly well off to do, well to do. And one person in particular, he doesn't have $1 million by any means, but he didn't have far from it. And he wrote to me and told me from the gossip, from the word by mouth that finally got around to him, that there was a lot of skullduggery going on down there in headquarters, and he wasn't going to send a penny more down there. But what I'll do, I'll give my money to the missionaries I know that are out in the field. Well, I had to write back to him and tell him, brother, you can't do that. I didn't mean to say you can't do it. I couldn't stop him from doing it. But I tried to explain to him his commitment was with God, not with men, not to a group of men, but it's with God. As every commitment that we make is with God. You don't make it to each other. You may make commitments to each other, but not in the gospel law. It's to God. So I wrote him quite a lengthy letter, and he wrote back and confessed that I was right. But he says, I'm still not going to send my money down there. The money I would have otherwise paid, I'm going to put it in the bank. Against the time that the error is corrected, then I'll give it to the church. And in the meantime, the church was starving for the need of that money that he could have supplied. Do you get the breadth of this and the depth of this? What our commitments are? This is more than just a teaching on tithing. It's a teaching on the commitments that we make before God, regardless of what it is, whether it's tithing or some other part of the laws of God. And if we make promises that we're going to go out and visit in each other's homes and then stay at home and don't do it, you have broken that commitment. And essentially, you have broken it with God, because that's a part of the work you're called upon to do. We can have a great campaign. Our brother this morning taught to us one of the most beautiful sermons I ever heard. And I hope you'd never forget it. That we must meet our commitments. Hard and difficult as it may be. For we are at the point of this crossroad where we must remove this fear and doubt and lack of understanding, misunderstanding, misinterpretation of things, and get back to the basics. Perhaps the old path that walks along that rod of iron whereby a river flows. And remember that vision of Lehi. Go back to it, refer to it, see what part you have as guidelines to help you weather the conditions that are in the world today. I've made statements that are pretty rash about the things today. There are things that have disturbed me as I don't know when I've had my inner soul disturbed so much as I read in the papers. I haven't read the paper for 2 days now. It's foolish to spend money on it if I'm not going to read it. But you know, Don McIndoo and myself in particular in this room tonight, and the evangelists, and those who are your ministry, must keep up with the news of the day and see the trend that the world is going into, and particularly this nation where we live, where there is given to us in its beginning the right of freedom of worship, which one day is going to be taken from us, because if we don't have that mark in our forehead or in a hand, we will not survive without faith. And that faith comes by meeting our commitments today and seeing the promise of God fulfilled because we have done so. Try him and see if he will not do that. One-tenth of your increase. I know when I was working for General Motors, there was a lot of things taken out of my check that I never did get. But there were things that held promise that I would get some, like insurance. The company paid insurance to me as an executive of the General Motors, Buick Motor Company. I had an extremely large insurance policy. That when I left the company, I lost all that. But if the time had come that there was need for me to have I forget now what it is. Anybody that has life insurance, you can borrow on it. Well, if there should come circumstances that you don't want to borrow, that money you pay tithing on, because that's your benefit. Now, that's just one example of what is. It cannot be counted as your increase, but can be counted as your increase. But if there are things that are taken away from you, like oh, so many things. I won't take the time. You who are working for corporations and such and drawing a check, there's so much taken out. Your Social Security one day is expected to pay off. And that's a benefit. You pay on that benefit, but you don't pay on it until you do receive that benefit, because that's an increase to you. And so you pay it on your increase. If you draw $100, if you earn $100, and there's $10 taken out of it, just for easy figuring. That's the only way I could do it myself, is the easy way. Then that means that you've got $90 to take home, to live on, to buy your clothing, to pay for your transportation, and things like that. Now, if it costs you money to go to and from your work, you can take that out of your You didn't know that, but you can, because that's what it costs you to obtain that money. That's what you have to pay in order to go to your work and come home again. Now, I'll admit that there are few of our people that abide by it in that way. I know that there are those that when they receive $100, that's what they pay. They're tithing on. And forget about all this, taking this out and that out, and then figuring out how much it's cost you to live and how much of this. And if you would do that, some people figure on a pair of shoelaces. And they count that, and so that's taken out so they don't have to pay tithing on that little item. Some of them are so stingy and tight and forgetful that this is for the welfare of the church and is to be given from the freedom of the heart. And if you give with any degree of reluctance, it's of no value, and you will not receive the reward from it. You will not do so. You may even suffer things that you would not otherwise have to put up with. But there's something about it, and I can't explain it. This family that I told you that they come to me and said, well, I can't pay my tithing this time. And the next time they couldn't pay it. And the next time they couldn't pay it. But finally, they were getting back on their feet, but they never did pay that 5%. Never did. But when I went to them and sit down in their family and talked to them about that, and to their shame, they acknowledged that they couldn't pay that 5% and made that commitment that they had made. They had made that commitment unwisely. Now, it's a good thing to do if you can, but it was done without forethought. And so there is so much to consider in our obligations to God, that with forethought, we find ourselves making commitments sometimes that it's almost impossible to meet. But if we're righteous in that thought, we'll be able to meet it. So this same family that could not pay their tithing for 2 or 3 months at a time, or weeks, or whatever, well, it was longer than weeks. When I sit down and talk with them and explain what they had done, and they felt ashamed. And they made a commitment there, a real hard, solid commitment, that never again would they fail to pay their tithing. And as soon as that man got his check, and his wife went out and worked occasionally, as soon as they got their check, the first thing they paid was the tenth to God, our Heavenly Father. They paid that. And to their surprise, they met all their other debts and obligations, and they couldn't explain why. It happens. It just happens. And you try it. Those of you who have not been able to go into the further depth of what constitutes tithing, and what I have tried to teach you tonight, and what others will teach you about this, use it. Not alone for yourself, but explain it to others. Grasp it so entirely that you'll understand it and can explain it to others. It's not difficult. We have only thought it to be difficult. And I'll promise you, and I don't know how I could pay it, but I know you will be paid. I will promise you that you will be paid abundantly, and as you cast your bread upon the waters, it will return to you 100-fold or 10-fold. Much more than you had put into it. And there's no other way to explain it other than the promise of God has been fulfilled by your righteousness and meeting your commitments to God. It doesn't necessarily constitute just tithing alone. When we have so committed ourselves to these things, whatever it may have been, God is going to reward us. He may just reward us spiritually. And you know, if you're spiritually happy and spiritually sound, you have the greatest value. You have the most valuable thing that is upon this earth ever promised to man. We have our people today that have it, whatever may be the cause, they have to go out and borrow money. And I've done it years ago. And I was able to meet that commitment of paying it back. That's true. But there were circumstances that prevailed that my paycheck wouldn't do it. And there were times that I didn't meet my commitment to God. Years and years ago. But once I discovered what I was teaching our people that I must also abide by, I found the values of that and making such a commitment. And there's no way to measure, there's no possible way that you can measure the benefits that you will derive from meeting that commitment to God. And so, if you want a part of those clouds removed that are immediately, it's within our grasp as a church, not just this local group, but the entire church. This message should be given to the whole of the church so that we could remove the cloud of fear, the cloud of doubt, indecision. And then will God more fully bless us to the extent that I can't identify them to you wholly. You feel when you come together the quietness. Have you noted that when you come to church lately, in the last just a little while, the quietness that you find here, of which you are a part? Have you noted the difference from what it used to be? For you've come into the house of God, and for the most part, you come on time. I see that possibly the first four rows here could hold every one of you that's here tonight, and that would leave 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. That would be 8 pews completely empty. It's a pity that the message that the servants of God deliver to you cannot be heard by all our people. You know, it is possible that it can. Because when we activate ourselves and meet our other commitments, such as meeting each other in each other's homes, which was a very common event when I was a young man, and when I wasn't even a young man, before that, for years, it was hard to find anybody at home in their own home. They was off visiting somebody else of the church and friends on Sunday between the morning and evening services. And they was activated during the week. They kept track of each other. If somebody got sick, it wasn't hardly an hour before the church people knew it. And they began to go and see if there's anything they could do. How many have been down to Stan and Bertie's and visited in their home? Just to talk about fishing if you want to. Or hunting. It might be good for our brother Andy to learn a little bit about that. Maybe you can instruct him on how to handle a gun after this. But now this is just a side thought. But I'd like to interest you in doing this. And going out and visiting. Come on over to my house. You know that television program about, come on over, come on over. Well, come on over to my house. And I'll feel anxious to reciprocate. In other words, come back to your place. And yet, first thing you know, we become so well acquainted with each other that we are more fully the brothers and sisters that we should be than we are now. And it's hard to believe that we could be better, but we can. And our way of life will so improve that it's hardly imaginable what we can have that we have not now. And so I've tried to talk to you, awaken you to the thought of meeting your commitments. It wasn't just the thought of paying your tithes, because I don't know how many pay your tithes, how many don't. If there's some that don't, why, I hope you do start paying. But commitment. It's been taught to us now for a couple of years, pretty near. That word seems to have been spoken and now has taken root. And we must acknowledge that we are committed to God first of all, and then to each other, and to the purpose that God has in calling us into his fold and kingdom. May God bless you to be so energized. And I know he will. There's no doubt about it. I know he will. And you'll turn maybe a week from now or 2 weeks from now or a year, sometime in the future, you look back. And there's no way of explaining to an outsider how you receive such blessings as you have. Because it's hardly understandable, but it's there. Again, I say, God bless you.
Thank you, Don. We'll use number 37 for our closing song. Number 37, let's stand and sing.